I can't remember.
You mentioned.
So I didn't have to. They told me, you know, don't worry about it. It's just a formality. And sure enough, nothing ever came up. I never had to show up.
You mentioned that one of the reasons that Miller took two players in with him in negotiations was so that you could hear what went on. Were there things the owners and the representatives said that were so unbelievable you would have needed witnesses to get people?
No, to accept it. No, other than mostly they just sort of like stonewalled. I mean, they just Miller would make his proposal and they'd say, "Well, think about it." I mean, that's what it amounted to. And occasionally they'd come along and they'd say, "Yeah, well, we're willing to offer you, we're willing to raise the money side of this from $5 million to $5,100,000." I mean, they actually would say things once in a while, but basically Miller would do all the talking and they would say, "Well, I don't think so, or we'll have to see," or something. The interesting meeting was the first. We used to have player meetings, joint player owner meetings during the All-Star break.
Okay.
And what would happen there would be Judge Cannon would get together with. In fact, O'Malley ran everything in those days. I mean, all the owners are equal, but somehow he was more equal. I mean, he, by force of personality or something, he ran. He basically imposed his will on everybody else. Not entirely, but he was by far he was the head guy. And they'd have a committee, and he and some of the others, and they'd meet with Cannon, and they'd say, "Okay, we need a new, we'll raise the meal money $2 a day or something next year. And we'll get you your water fountain in the bullpen in Milwaukee that you want." So the next day they come in and they say, "What proposals are there?" "Well, there's a proposal to raise the meal money 2 days, and there's a proposal for the drinking fountain." And okay, everybody, and they pass it. That's the way things would work. Now all of a sudden, Miller gets elected. So we have this big meeting, it's like 108 degrees in St. Louis. And everybody shows up. Basically, there was all the player representatives there, and basically the owners each had most of the owners showed, and like the general manager. So I mean, like, just like the two top wheels out of each club, and here's this big meeting, and instead of everything's ironed out the night before amongst a few as to what's going on, it's like cold turkey. So Miller gets up and he's got this agenda, and "I think we should have do away with the reserve clause, and I think we need to raise the minimum salary, it hasn't been raised," and I mean, he had his points of why and everything, "and the reserve clause is extremely unfair, we should do away with that, and let's vote on that." "Yeah, sure." And I mean, all of a sudden, I didn't know it was going to happen or anything, and all of a sudden, the owners just sort of sit there and nothing happened. I mean, a 50 or however many, 70 person meeting
He brought it to a dead halt. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, you can't bring up stuff like this and expect to discuss it in an hour and change. You're not going to change. I mean, now looking back on it, I can see that just, you can't have a 70 person group decide on something like that. I mean, they weren't about to change over anyway, but that wasn't the forum to do it or something. So the nature of the joint meetings with the owners abruptly changed, and I don't think they lasted. Might have been the last one.
Do you think Miller did that to let you see just how little response you'd get?
I never thought about that.
Consciousness raising?
I guess, I'm sure he knew what he was doing. Yeah, I'm now that I look back, I'm sure he knew nothing was going to happen. But I think he wanted to. I think it was probably a joint thing. I think he wanted the owners really at that time weren't quite sure what was going on. And I think he wanted he made his points, which is what he eventually got. I mean, and that was a perfect forum to make sure everybody knew what his agenda was. So I think from that, probably, I never thought about this before, but this is, I'm just thinking now, making it up as I go along, sort of what what he probably was thinking. And I would imagine that his primary motive was to make, I mean, here was an ideal form to make his side of the case, where he could, I mean, he presented his arguments of why and everything for it. That I can go public with what I'm proposing and why it's just.
And he always had reasons.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and he was very fair, man, extremely fair. Very, people I don't think ever realize this, but I mean, like I was saying, he was, players wanted, no, that's not going to go back 5 years, would be their attitude. And I mean, and he was like the only one that sort of looked out for retired players, almost.
Since you retired, how many times has your pension retroactively been raised by subsequent
They all come to me and they say, when should we take our pension? In fact, Miller did a study. When he first got in it, you could take it at age 50, anytime from 50 to 65. And he did a study after a few years, and the average age of taking was 50.1. And then they reduced it to 45. You can, now it's 45 to 65.
Probably 45.
And what happens is, and he pointed this out, that the guys look and they say, if I take it at age 50, I get, let's say, $25,000. And if I take it at 65, I get, I don't know what it is, $70,000 or something. Big, I mean, huge difference. But if I take it at 51, I get, let's say, $27,000. Okay, that's $2,000 more I get. But it's going to take me 13 years to make up the $25,000 I didn't take when I was age 50. I may be dead by then. So boom, and plus, I mean, it's like with Tops. I mean, it's the exact same. Tops had a lock. And Miller came and says, "You guys are getting ripped off." And the Tops contract, when I was playing for all those years and everything, they give you $125, either cash or a catalog. They give you gifts, jewelry with a big markup. It was like $200 worth of jewelry, or $175 radio, or whatever. They had this whole catalog of things, and the buyers would pick out what they wanted. And if you wanted, they would sign you to a 2-year extension on your contract for $75 cash. So the guys would sign up, I mean, for $75 to have in their pocket, they'd sign up for the rest of their, I mean, for 10 years if Tops would do it. And so it would never run out. Fleers tried to get in, and Pierce was trying to get in like in the early 60s. And somewhere sort of thought, I mean, I'm not going to sign. 75, that's fine, but it's not a whole lot of money. Maybe I'm not going to sign the extension. So Fleers came along and they said, "We'll give you $250, double the money." So I let my Tops run out, and in 63 I signed with Fleers. And for 4 years I was signed with Fleers. But they only got this deal that the guy signed for $75 forever. They had a lock. Fleers only could sign like 20 guys. And they never could get in the market. And so finally they just dropped out, and I went back to signing with Tops. And I wish now that I'd had signed with Tops, and now like the bubblegum cards. I mean, that's a big thing now. And I got 4 years of no cards. So I just haven't. All these different cards is fun to have. But and then it wasn't until Miller came in that he says, "Oh, we got to sign some kind of royalty agreement and stuff." But more money. I mean, immediately the money jumped up, and then they got a royalty thing. And now, of course, now they get $70,000 a year or something from it. And he was the one that did that. But this mentality of you know, for $75, you know. And it's the same way in a pension, the quicker they take it. So I always told him, look, if you got any money, if you can live now, live on it, because you don't know how long you'll live, and with inflation, if you take that money now, you're stuck with the rest of your life. Plus the widow, if you don't sign, she gets half of what you get at 65, which is a ton of money. It's probably more than you get at 50. And if you take it at 50, then she only gets half. Now they've raised, I think she gets 100 now or something. That was the last raise. my group. There's like 85 groups now, and I mean it's all different. So I said, so with anybody else, I said, wait, if you can live all right now, don't take it. Leave it. Don't take it. And I get out of baseball, my standard of living doesn't go down immediately, my salary dropped off considerably. And the stock market started going down, and pretty soon, we can afford that. I'll sell some stocks and put an addition on the house. And I sold some more stocks. So all of a sudden, man, I got college, got the 4 kids through college.
Oh, boy.
And my wife's saying, once they're out of college, we don't need that much. So at like 52 or something, I started taking mine. So, although I did
do as I say, not as I do,
yeah,
right?
Although I did manage to well, I'm back again, I'm in trouble again, but for a while I was putting, where I was working with with Pete Marwick for a few years, and they had a 401k plan, so I was in effect taking part of that pension and just putting it right back in, so I wasn't quite taking it all. And then I left them a year and a half ago, so. I don't have that, so no, not earmarking.
Do you think, on balance, the Players Association has done a good job of taking care of the generations previous to yours?
It's relative. Knowing the mentality of the players for knowing as I. Having sat, especially the World Series shares meetings, I mean, where you can really see the mentality there. I think they've done very. Somebody's talked about it, cutting the old timers out. I mean, from their natural instincts, they've done very well. I mean, it'd be nice to, in a sense, I mean. It's sort of luck that the players now are making all this money, and it from one standpoint they for all the money they're making, it wouldn't hurt them to take a ton of it and spread it back to the old timers. There is some justice in that, but I mean that's the way it is. When I was playing, they said, man, you guys make all the money because guys are. Guys in the 30s played for $3,000 or $4,000 or something.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always been that. There's been a huge jump, of course, since when I got out. But some of the guys I think are real bitter about it. But I mean, I've been able to live reasonably well. It's funny though. I went to Swarthmore. And. They send you questionnaires there, like they're trying to get you to give money,
right.
And you don't have to say how much you make, but they give you a box to check off.
Yeah.
I mean, like the bottom one is like $50,000 a year.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I gotta be in the lower
off on the edge of the farm
I'm
there
probably,
somewhere,
I'm down,
right?
Yeah, I'm down to the bottom 25% or something quartile out of Swarthmore, and now compared to the ball players, I'm making as much money as I ever made salary and World Series share put together right now, but I mean it's nothing. It's not even half of what the minimum salary is.
Staggering range.
But I mean personally, I'm not. I mean that's the way it is. I mean the money's there, and what I tell people, I mean a lot of people. I get this constantly. Don't you think they're overpaid? I said no, really. They're TV performers, is what they are. I mean, that's a good. I mean, not only they're entertainers in a sense, it's really like what you want to compare them to is like Bruce Springsteen.
Right.
I did this. He came into Washington 4 or 5 years back or something. My son was a big Bruce Springsteen fan. Even though we got there, they were $18 a ticket or something, and he drew 60,000 for two nights. So that's what, let's say 50 makes the arithmetic easier. 50,000 for two nights, that's
900,000
a night. So he drew $1.8 million two nights. I don't know what share he keeps, but
yeah.
I mean, compare the ball player to him,
I mean, he gets a few hundred thousand, that's not out of line.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, these people are, it happens that it's a whole team, but they're drawn. Why shouldn't they share like Bruce Springsteen does?
I saw a quote from Johnny Bench in 1975 or 6, pretty early on. And he said, Marlon Brando gets $3 million for making a movie, and I forget his other example, in show business, gets this for 3 days of work, and I play 190 games a year, including spring training, and I'm overpaid at $170,000.
Yeah, I mean, people are innately jealous of anybody. It's like the politicians. There is no, like a congressman, I don't know what the senator's paying, $130,000 or something. Somebody at that level that handle, I mean, they handle billions of dollars. Somebody at that level at Ballmer Gas Electric or something makes you know, $800,000 or something. I mean, that they should be making, you know, like $1 million or something. I mean, they should be making some halfway decent salary. Because they're in the public eye, people won't pay them.
They'd be less tempted to steal if they did.
I don't know. Yeah, that's true. And when you stop, you know, like somebody said, well, the governor makes $75,000 or something. But then somebody said, well, look at the perks. He's got this mansion, and he's got this yacht. And he says, you have this all up. He's making what he doesn't have to pay for. He's making $500,000 or something. This is like 10 or 15 years ago or something, or 20 years ago. So there's all these perks and things that it's hard to measure. But I mean, people are, yeah, anybody who makes this huge salary, people shouldn't make that kind of money. So
I've read criticisms of some of the guys from, say, 68 and 69. One guy who hit 220 and was making 40,000, he took all kinds of heat for it. You guys never dreamt, did you, that what would happen with salaries and the reserve clause until Miller came along? Never tried.
No. I mean, some people have vision. Branch Rickey was one. He had vision to see how things could be, and Miller did. But there's not many people in the world like that can look at the future and say, no, it doesn't have to be. People sort of accept the way things are, and that's sort of unquestionably.
Just got a couple more questions. How important was it in 69 to get the qualifying for the pension lowered from 5 to 4 years? Was that considered a
I can't remember.
Deal?
I don't think so, no. I think there was more money. The money was going up so much that they could afford it. I think it was more than that.
It was one of the concessions that they got.
Yeah, I don't think that was a sticking point. The real sticking point was the formula.
Okay. And when it was standard for the owner's side to point out that the baseball players had by far the best pension of any group of workers in any industry. In a way, that was an illusion, though, right? Because so few
players
got to qualify for it.
Yeah, right. See, that's the other thing. What you got to compare it to would be suppose you take a select group of CEOs in business that make the same salary. What's their pensions related to this? I mean, instead of taking the whole industry, it's really the pension just covers your what would be in a normal company, your very top management. That's really what you should be comparing it to. Oh, speaking of other pensions, I don't know. I guess it's way past you. Miller, about the same time that the football players were negotiating their pension and everything, we came up with like $5 million, and they settled for like $1 million going in. They jacked the interest rate assumptions way up, so it looked like their pension was comparable to ours.
Uh-huh.
But it really wasn't, because ours was much more actuarially sound. In other words, we said we'll be getting, I don't know what the pension was, but let's say $1,000 a month.
That's
Yeah, or whatever it was. But it was based on probably a low interest rate. So the chances are that when it came due, there'd be more money than that in there. The football players had a pension, it was close to ours, but it's based on a interest rate.